This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. James P. Johnson was perhaps the greatest of the stride pianists. His recordings are jazz classics. But Johnson also wrote symphonic works, and those pieces were rarely, if ever, performed. In the 1930s, it was difficult for an African American to get his symphonic works taken seriously. Now there's a new recording of Johnson's compositions for orchestra, featuring the Concordia Symphony, conducted by its founder, Marin Alsop. She's also the principal conductor of the Colorado Symphony. She comes from a musical family. Her father was the violinist and concertmaster for the New York City Ballet Orchestra, and her mother played cello in the orchestra. Here's the title track of Victory Stride, the symphonic works of James P. Johnson. Some of Johnson's symphonic works were performed in 1941 at Carnegie Hall, but when Marin Alsop started looking for the scores, they were presumed to be lost. With the help of Johnson's biographer, Scott Brown, she tracked down Johnson's family members. They initially wanted nothing to do with Alsop because they had been cheated over royalties in the past.
We started a very long development of a relationship with his family members, and fortunately they loved the biography that Scott wrote, Scott Brown. And that really opened the door to a dialogue, which and it was really a longer experience. It was more like developing a rapport and a relationship and a trust, so that Johnson's relatives and surviving family members could see that we weren't in it for anything other than the love of the music and the love of his writing and wanting to keep his name alive.
Why did James P. Johnson have trouble getting his symphonies played in his own lifetime?
It's an excellent question. I think it's probably a complex question. I don't want to minimize it. There are several things that I'm aware of. One is that Johnson had a very, very difficult life health-wise. He had several strokes, I think actually 8 during his lifetime. So as soon as he would begin to get some notoriety, he would be stricken with this horrible health crisis and have to recover for several months. And believe it or not, each time he was able to recover so that he could play piano almost as well as he had prior to the stroke. So his determination was quite formidable. But I think that really, that got in his way, obviously, quite a bit. There are a couple other things. I think you have to remember that many black composers of the time who wanted to write for symphony orchestra were discouraged from that venue. They were really steered toward popular music. So this is, of course, the prevailing atmosphere, and I think unless you had someone to promote your music, had a conductor, had a mentor, it was very, very difficult to get performances.
Let me play the opening of another piece that's featured on your new recording, Victory Stride, the symphonic music of James P. Johnson. And this is Drums, a symphonic poem, which he wrote in the early 1940s. Introduce us to this work.
Well, this is a great example of Johnson's ability to integrate different styles and to somehow bring together the world of jazz. In this particular piece, it's African drumming that he's really somehow, I think ingeniously, putting through the sounds of the symphonic orchestra. So instead of having, ethnic instruments at the beginning of the piece, he actually tries to simulate the African drumming with the orchestral timpani. And it's a great piece for the timpanist. They love the opening, and it's a lot of fun to hear because the more raucous you can be, the more successful the piece. And from this opening of the drumming, it goes into, I would say it's a cross between a hot big band number and really like the symphonic music of Ellington.
The Concordia Orchestra, which performs Johnson's music on your new recording, is an orchestra that you founded in 1984, I believe with $10,000 of your own money. That's something I'd imagine very few people do, is put up their own money to start an orchestra. What was behind that?
I don't know. That money was making me very nervous. I had to get rid of it quickly. So if you want to get rid of money fast, start an orchestra. No, I think it was really out of a... My colleagues, I was a violinist first and was doing a lot of freelance work in New York. And my friends knew that I had this aspiration and this hidden passion is the only thing I can call it, to become a conductor. And they would all come over and play for me here and there. And they were extremely encouraging. And I felt that I had taken advantage of them for probably the maximum number of years I could. And so I needed to formalize our relationship, basically, and I really needed to pay them for their time and their energies and efforts. And that's how Concordia was born. And also this love, as I mentioned, my love of jazz, and how do you bring that together with your commitment to classical music, and what can you possibly do? What kind of project would blend these two elements? And Concordia really grew out of that dual approach to music and that dual love for jazz and classical music that I have.
My guest is conductor Maren Alsop. Her new recording, Victory Stride, features the symphonic works of James P. Johnson. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with conductor Maren Alsop. I know you took piano lessons before violin lessons. How old were you when you started piano?
I was 2, and...
What could you possibly do at the age of 2?
Really, I don't remember at all. I think mostly I sat there and screamed, but I retired from that career when I was 6, so that gives you an idea of what kind of emotional commitment I had to the piano. It was tough. I think mostly my mother claims, of course, that I was the next Van Cliburn, but I don't remember anything about it except getting hot chocolate at the recitals that we would play, which was my favorite part. So I think my parents in many ways were hoping that I would fall in love with the piano, and that would serve their dream of having a piano trio as well as having a child. So when it didn't work out, they were pretty disappointed.
Did they let you stop?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I must say, when your parents are musicians, they don't let up, because they remember that moment, that critical moment in their childhood when their parents did not let them stop playing. You know, there's always a crossroads, or we all come to crossroads in our lives about these kind of things. And without some encouragement, kids, very talented kids, often give up the instrument, and then they regret it later. But my mother in particular really did not want me to give up the piano, but we had, I think, our first major encounter around then, and winning that was an important important moment for me. But she got her revenge when I was 7, because they tricked me into going to summer camp, which ended up being Meadowmount, which is probably the concentration camp for violinists. And believe it or not, I fell in love with the violin through Meadow Mountain, my teachers there. And so she actually won in the long run. But mothers always win in the long run.
I always wonder what makes somebody think about conducting instead of making a career out of playing their instrument. What made you fall in love with conducting?
Falling in love is a good way to put it. It's almost stronger than that. It's like what I imagine when people talk about a religious calling, you know, that they had no doubt that they had to do this and it was inevitable. This is how I felt about conducting from a very early age, I'd say from about 12 on.
So was what excited you, the stage aspect of conducting, or also the idea that you would have a score and would interpret it?
I think the actual conducting part was not intriguing, you know, or the idea of standing up in front of, 100 people. And, you know, I never thought about that part. I think it was more the idea of being responsible for the composer's wishes, that somehow I would be the messenger of the composer, you know, that I would be the, somehow have wings and be able to transport Tchaikovsky's ideas to the musicians, and mostly that I would be carrying this message back and forth. I always feel more like the captain of the team rather than the conductor. Just that my role is to really enable the musicians and challenge them to do the best they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And when that all works, it's just like an incredible, I don't know, it's like an orgy in a way. It's a wonderful, wonderful moment. And when you feel that Tchaikovsky is really standing there with all of you, you know, it's not just me, because no matter how much I wave my arms, no sound comes out. It's really the musicians. And if you can get a group of musicians that are just dying to do what they've been trained to do and open the door for them, they can work miracles. And that's really my goal.
When you started conducting, did you feel that your style was any different than your male counterparts because of things you'd been socialized to do as a woman?
That's a good question. I think about it sometimes when I'm specifically trying to deal with physical gestures, and I sometimes wonder if we as women have certain physical responses that we're, I don't know, maybe they're archetypal, I don't know if they're learned or just inherent behaviors, but I'm not sure if it has to do with being a woman or it's just part of my personality. But there are certain things, like when you, just physical gestures, when you have to give a huge fortissimo socketum chord to the brass section, you know, and it's all these guys generally, and here comes my inherent prejudice also. It's usually these big guys in the brass section, you know, you got to really lay it into them. I used to just, you know, do the gesture and then kind of retreat as though I were saying I'm sorry. And I think this phrase, I'm sorry, I don't know whether it's part of the female role or just something that is particular to me, but I'm always trying to, when I first started, I was always saying I'm sorry, you know, whether it was gesture-wise or actually verbally. Someone would play a wrong note, I would say, oh, gee, I'm sorry. You know, just trying to smooth things over and make everything nice and take more responsibility. There aren't too many male conductors I ever saw who said I was sorry. But it could be just me as well. And fortunately, my friends in Concordia, my colleagues, you know, they come up to me and say, what are you saying I'm sorry for? Forget it. Lose that phrase. And they were very helpful in helping me break some of these patterns.
Did you lose that phrase, I'm sorry?
I never say I'm sorry, even when it's my fault. No, I'm kidding. I try to only say I'm sorry when it really is my fault now. So, I did lose that.
What do you wear when you're on stage? Do you try to look like a male conductor in tails?
No, but I do wear pants just because I'm more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But I have a beautiful Armani suit, which is just gorgeous, and I'm afraid to have it cleaned too many times. No, but it doesn't smell too badly, so it's all right.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Maren Alsop conducts the Concordia Orchestra on the new recording Victory Stride, featuring the symphonic works of James P. Johnson. It's on the Music Masters label. Here's Nightclub from Johnson's Harlem Symphony. Thank you. This is Fresh Air.